Let's see what the stew has for us today.
Welcome to the Gnomecast, the Gnome Stew's tabletop gaming advice podcast. Here we talk with other gnomes about gaming things to avoid becoming part of the stew, so I guess we better be good. Today we have John, the head gnome in chief, Matt, and myself, Ange. We're going to discuss Craig Dedrick's guest article, Texting in Character. Before we dive into the main topic, though, let's ask our get-to-know-a-gnome question. This is probably a question for us slightly older gnomes, but in the spirit of today's topic, what was your first experience with technology and RPGs merged together? John?
Oh, see, I remember this, and actually it's a weird roundabout story that just came full fruition in the last, like, year. But I remember in AD&D 2nd Edition, they had RTF documents of the books, and those were wonderful. They came on a CD in the back of the book or a disc or something. I don't remember, like, but they were official with the book's versions made by TSR. And I was working at a college at the time, and I'm like, this is awesome. I can go through these. I can copy stuff out. I can make my own, like, spell books out of these by copying and pasting these and printing them off. Like, it opened up so many options in using that, you know, game and edition. So I really love those, and those probably helped me get into it even more hardcore because I was a techie person and I now had a tech element to this. But through a meetup recently in the group that I am a player in for like a monthly, every other month game, the GM is the guy who compiled those for TSR.
That's awesome.
Yeah, he was working on an army base at the time. He was like, yep, I'm on a desk duty here because we're in peacetime. There's nothing really to do. I've got these books. I've kind of already typed and scanned and used OCR on the army's equipment to do this. Hey, TSR, you know, I do stuff in your organized play. Do you want me to put more into him? And he kind of did him as like a little bit of a fan thing, got a little bit of a payment, a little bit of a like kickback, hey, way to go. And he was, you know, instrumental in compiling the beta docs that they turned into the final docs. So, you know, we have these things, you know, back and forth where I'm like, oh yeah, no, I was talking like Ed Greenwood did the forward from Mario's book. He's like, oh yeah, no, Ed Greenwood and I talked back in the day in 1980 something. And, you know, so we kind of trade barbs back and forth like that, you know, as to who knows who in the industry.
That's awesome. What about you, Matt? What was your first experience with tech and RPGs merging together?
Oh, gosh. So for the younger listeners, you know your Texas Instrument calculator that you use in high school to do your graphing.
I didn't.
I'm sure they probably just use computers now anyway.
Oh, I know what I did with my graphic calculator. It wasn't graphing.
Well, back in the day, Texas Instruments used to make computers, which are, I believe, less powerful than their modern calculators. And I had a TI-99-4A, and I played the hell out of Tunnels of Doom, which was D&D on a Texas Instruments computer. And in fact, you can find a reboot of it on the web, and it's pretty faithful, although it runs in Java and it looks a little nicer. I encourage you to go try it out.
If you've got a link for that, we'll put it in the show notes.
Oh, okay. I will find a link for it.
That's awesome. For myself, it was probably 1994. I'd gone back to school to finish my degree, and I'd gotten a part-time job working in a math computer lab. And it was mostly just sitting there and, you know, if a student needed help walking over and rebooting their computer, I certainly wasn't doing any math tutoring. And I had a friend show up who I used to game with, and he was like, oh, Ange, you're gonna love this. You've got an account for working in this lab, right? And I'm like, yeah. And he brought me over to a computer and he showed me how to log into my very first Mush, which was an online role-playing game with other people. And that was at a time when I wasn't getting a lot of face-to-face, you know, group gaming. That was amazing. And it was like, you mean I can role-play with people online? This is amazing!
Nice.
You know, those things still exist. I mean, there aren't as many anymore, but you can still find them.
Yeah, the last time I played a Mush was 2004. And, you know, it was cool for a little while. I met some cool people there that I'm still in contact with, but there's a lot of crazy. There's a lot of crazy in the people that play mushes, and because they get really, really into it and gets very intense very quickly. But moving on to the topic today, Craig Dedrick submitted a guest article to the Stu discussing cell phones at the game table. This is often a sign of a problem at a table, and many GMs will forbid them, but Craig's article took a delightful twist. He discussed a dread game he ran for a group of younger players and how their cell phone texting took on a life of its own during the game. The players began texting back and forth in character. One player, playing an older character, even began to text like one of her grandparents, only using emojis instead of typing because that was easier. If you haven't read the article, I highly recommend it. Cell phones get a bad rap at gaming tables, often for good reason, but I've always felt that a complete ban would be a little too draconian. There are times when they shouldn't be at the table, and like Craig's article shows, times when they may be okay. Let's discuss. How about you, John?
You know, I remember you asked me, like, oh, hey, you should be on this because you have some very strong thoughts about technology at the table. and I definitely do. Like many years ago, I definitely kind of had the complete draconian ban. Like, no, like, don't bring the phones to the table. And I would have to kind of gently approach that with some of my more, you know, with my group at the time who were friends of mine. I'd be like, guys, I don't want this here because you keep getting distracted. And one or two people would use electronic dice rollers. I'd be like, no, I want everybody to use real dice because it has that feel. It brings it to the table. Like, I'm trying to build this, like, physical space that emphasizes the role-playing world that doesn't, you know, really emphasize that. Also, I'm not sure that you're not cheating, but I wouldn't say that to them because you want to bring it up that way. But, you know, it's that sort of thing where, not that I didn't trust these people, but people come to gaming because they want to do awesome things. And when the dice are going against them, some people sometimes are tempted to just be like, no. Yeah. I mean, I totally made a 17, not a 15, which was too little to make that roll. And that's so much easier to do with a phone, you know? So I've definitely had some thoughts about them and be like, no, let's just keep that out of the table. Now, as I've been playing with different people, now as I've been doing, you know, more convention games, I am generally pretty okay with them. Like, I am trust, like, yeah, cool. I don't actually care if you're cheating. If I think you are, I'm going to throw a harder thing at you. Like, we'll see. Oh, a 19 doesn't hit you. How about a 29? Yeah. This dragon has a plus 10. Like, we can make this harder. I'm fine modifying the game like that if I think there is some shenanigans going on, you know, but I've seen people less and less using it as a method of distraction to not actually be interested in the game. Like, if they're showing up to the game, they're probably a little bit older, you know, in at least their mid-20s. And so they're kind of like, yeah, no, I am here to do this. This is where I am focusing my attention on this entertainment. And there are definitely really cool ways, like this article shows, that you can do stuff with it. You know, if people are texting back and forth and somebody is, you know, like the grandparent who only talks in text, it's like, wait, what are you saying there? Okay, now I have to try to interpret that. That leads to some role-playing moments. Like, are you saying we should hit the demon on the head with the hammer, or does the demon have a hammer and we should look out for that? You know, you kind of have to, like, play into that a little. It gives you an extra dimension. So I think there are a ton of ways that electronics can help if they're done well and if everybody kind of buys into how they're going to be used.
Right. And I've always thought that if the players are getting completely distracted and lost in their phones, that's also a time to take a step back and be like, is it the player and their problem, or is it me as a GM not doing enough to keep them engaged?
The other thing that I've noticed, and I find myself falling to this, is somebody kind of takes the spotlight and starts running with it. And, you know, if you're a polite person, you don't want to kind of jump in and try to pull it back away from them. They're obviously having fun. They're enjoying it. So you're kind of like, well, what am I going to do? It's really not my turn. I'm the fighty guy. They're the talky person.
Right.
I'll just let them do their thing. I don't want to interfere with them, and I can't actually add to their situation. So I'll just zone out for a bit until it comes back to the area that I have fun with.
Right. How about you, Matt? What are your thoughts here?
Well, I think for the first time a couple weeks ago, I was running a game and one of my players said to me, ahem, ahem. And I said, what? And she pulled out her phone and pointed to it. I'm there like, what? She says, I sent you a text message. Read it. Yeah. So all of a sudden I realized that, you know, the old passing a note to your GM or passing notes back and forth has been subsumed by the cell phone while I wasn't paying attention. So there is that. But I also think, you know, that not only is the situation that was Craig described in his article one possible application of this, but I think we've also previously at the Stew touched on other ways that this could be applied. And of course, I don't have an exhaustive list, but I did think of a couple while I was reading the notes. And, you know, we have the article that I wrote, Micro Sessions, Gaming in That 10 Minutes You Weren't Using Anyway, which is all about doing some role-playing or sending out campaign updates while you're standing in line for the bank. Not that people do that anymore. And then recently, one of our guest authors wrote about Twitch tabletop RPGs online viewing. And, you know, that's a very similar thing. And it actually harkens back to your mush days, Angela, where you're, you know, playing on your cell phone wherever you happen to be. When somebody else makes their roll, you can jump right on it. So I think there's the particular aspect that Craig was talking about is a really cool aspect, but I think there's so many more legs that this thing has that it's going, this technology is going to continue to revolutionize our industry, I think.
Yeah, I have an online D&D game I've played, and while I wasn't able to get involved in the offline portions of it as much as some of the other players, they would have RP threads on a bulletin board that they would basically do scenes in between the actual sessions. For me, writing that much on a phone is a little difficult. It was still nice to be able to get them on the phone and be able to keep up with what was happening and see where things were going and what people were doing.
Most of my current groups right now, and we got into this with one group, and I've just been carrying it through to every other one, but we're using Slack for our RPGs, you know, for the games, for all the like, oh yeah, no, I'll figure out the gold you got later and write it up and send it in Slack. Yeah, we'll figure out XP there. And then we have role play, you know, channels where we go and we talk about, you know, like let's have the interaction, you know, at the next, like, I'll give you guys a discount if you have a good enough interaction at the next merchant that you meet when you want to buy this stuff that you're talking about, you know, and then you can kind of take that stuff out of the experience at the table and move it to, you know, that other space and still keep people engaged, especially if you've got a long time between games. It keeps the game alive in a lot of ways.
That's pretty cool. I hadn't thought of using Slack, but that makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense. It was not quite to the extent that Craig's experience was, but I did have a situation where there was some, it was actually a Dread game as well, but it was a texting in character in game. And the one of the players was playing a teenage kid whose most important person in his life had been his grandfather, who had recently passed away. In the scenario, he gets a text, you know, from his grandfather. So I basically just... Yeah, I just texted him and basically was like, oh, TJ, check your phone. And he looked at it and he just gave me a look. And then throughout the rest of the game, he would basically, if he needed a tip or a hint, he'd basically text Grandpa. Yeah. And then, you know, as the scenario ended and he was one of the few players that actually survived, he's like, you know, love you, Grandpa. See you in 70 years.
Okay, boy. See you in 5. No, that hit me in the creepy place, you know, because pulling that thing into real life, it actually just made me think you could use Google like that, something simple, you know, in a modern game, you know, especially like many Dread games are, just be like, you know, look up somebody's name and murder, you know, or find something you can like link into and then just suggest to the players, be like, why don't you guys Google that? And then wrap that into your game. And when they're Googling it in real life, just having them a little freaked out about like, oh, this is something that actually occurred, you know. You'd have to be a little like secure about that, make sure everybody's buying into that idea, because that does, you know, may cross some lines for some people. But that, you know, if somebody can Google stuff and then be like, is this actually happening in the game, and you've already looked it up, that just brings it right into the real world.
Oh yeah, I've run especially with Monster of the Week, because it's kind of the real world just one step left. I will very often, you know, I go to the table with no plan, no setting. I'm like, where are you guys? Oh, we're in Chicago. And as they're finishing up their characters, I'm on my phone Googling creepy things in Chicago. Oh, H.H. Holmes. Oh, these kids are in a high school. Oh, I'm totally doing this. And end up having them solve this mystery involving ghosts coming back from the H.H. Holmes murders.
Ooh.
You know, it's like, it's great because you can just quickly access some real-world information to give you a way to pull things in.
Did you know that H.H. Holmes, for a few years, was missing in action, and those happened to be the years that the Jack the Ripper murders occurred?
I know that there are definitely people out there who try and tie H.H. Holmes into those murders. It's interesting seeing what people try and do with those different mysteries and murders and like, especially the Jack the Ripper one. There's about a half a dozen that I can think of off the top of my head, things where they're like, well, it could have been this person who also did these things.
That's about the level of conspiracy theory that I can enjoy. If it gets more intense than that, I'm out.
Yeah.
It makes the Jack the Ripper murders more interesting, as if the Jack the Ripper murders needed to be more interesting.
Of course, that's a whole topic for another episode.
Well, I think that's pretty good. So special thanks to our Patreon backers, Awesome Gnome supporters like Benjamin D. Horning, Gavin, and Sam Gorton. Thanks to their help and others like them, this show is funded by the Gnome Stew Patreon. You too can become a Patreon backer by following the Patreon link on the Gnome Stew website to the Gnome Stew Patreon. This ad is brought to you by your cell phone bill. You thought I was going to say Patreon there, didn't you? No, it's your Patreon bill paid on your cell phone. You can find us at GnomeStew.com, at GnomeStew on Twitter, and GnomeStew on Facebook.
So, John and Matt, where else can we find you on the internet?
Go ahead, John.
Go ahead, Matt.
Okay. as I tell you every time, Angela, I don't have a web presence other than GnomeStew.
I know, but I ask the question because there are some people among the gnomes, like Senda, who have a long list of things to share.
And that just means we can set up a web presence for him that he doesn't get to control.
Now, that's just evil.
The last time I had a web presence, you in fact set it up, John.
I did, didn't I?
Yes, you did. Big Sigma Data something or other.
Yeah.
Got me a job.
Excellent. So, Angela, where can we find you?
You can find me at Orikes13 over on Twitter. O-R-I-K-E-S-13.
And I can be found wherever John Arcadian exists online, except for that one guy who's kind of cloning me in a lot of things. But literally, if you Google John Arcadian, you will find me as most of the results.
So, John, did we avoid the stew this week?
I'll text you the answers.
Oh.
How exactly does that work? Is John the one making the stew? Is John in danger of being in the stew? Or does he have immunity here?
You know, it's good to be the king.